Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Time is 7 minutes after 9 a.m. Apologize for the late start. We were distracted with some other business this morning, Senate business. It is April 20th, 2023. With me today is Co-Chair Senator Hoffman, Co-Chair Senator Olson, Senator Bishop, Senator Merrick, Senator Keel, myself, Stedman. Senator Wilson is excused for out-of-state business today, and we're going to start today and tomorrow having public testimony on House Bill 39, which is the fiscal year 24 operating budget, and we're going to commingle that with House Bill 41, FY24 mental health budget, and also the capital budget, Senate Bill 41. So, either of those three budgets are open season for public comment. And we'd like to ask people to limit their comments to 2 minutes and be respectful for other Alaskans who want to participate because we start and stop here at 9 and quit at 11 and then at 1:30 to 3. So we'll be starting and stopping on time regardless of the length of the list for testimony, and we should be able to take care of all testimony. We rarely have a problem with that. Also, please keep your comments focused on one of the three or all three budgets. And this is not the time to have comments on other policy bills before the committee. This is dealing with the budgets, and there's plenty to talk about in the budget, so I'm sure you'll have comments. And this morning, we're going to go ahead and hear from Southeast, Prince William Sound, and Kodiak. And we'd like you to be signed up by at least 10:15. And we have the state kind of divided up. So if we can go ahead and start, I guess I'll start with the off-net. And we're going to go to Prince of Wales. And we're going to start Heidi Young, please, if she could introduce herself for the record. And please do that when you start, introduction of yourself for the record, and who you represent, if it's a group, and where you're located. And start your testimony, and I won't start the timer until you get through your introductions.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. My name is Heidi Young, and I own Island Care Services. I'm a care coordinator. And I have been a care coordinator in the state of Alaska for 15 years. And I just want to start out by thanking the department for directing the legislature to develop a 5-year plan to eliminate the wait list for IDD waivers. I serve families from all over Alaska on all 5 of the waivers in the state, and these services are critical in supporting families in Alaska. These services help the state save money. They used to say the legislature waivers are savers. That is still true today. ALI waivers help people receive care in their own homes at 1/3 the cost of hospitalization. These services get people out of the hospital and back into their home communities. Without these services, our elderly will all be living in the long-term care units in the hospital instead of in their own home community. It is statistically proven that people do better in their own home communities, better health outcomes, and better physical and mental health outcomes. There's a number of studies that have proven this. In Alaska, if you are a parent of a child with a developmental disability, the wait list can be as long as 12 years. On average, families are waiting 52 months for services. That is 52 months that the family is not able to be a full participant in our state economy, in state activities. They can't really be complete contributors because they have the responsibility of 24/7 care for highly intensive family members. I pride myself with out-of-the-box thinking and ways to save money, but I'm just telling you, the waiver program is saving the state of Alaska a significant amount of money, and I just appreciate the legislature's attention to this funding. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Young. We'll now go to Wrangell. Jeff Good, please.
Yes, thank you for the time to speak today. Jeff Good, the borough manager for the city and borough of Wrangell. And just kind of want to touch on a couple of topics we have here locally. One is trying to get through our 401 permit for our wastewater treatment plant and the 301H waiver that's associated with it. This affects 9 communities throughout Alaska, trying to get through this permit. And we just recently, we were projecting around a $3 to $5 million project to get disinfection, for our community and for our wastewater treatment plant. And we just had the engineer's estimate come in here over the past couple of weeks, and that preliminary estimate jumped from $3 to $5 million up to $12.5 million, which would be a significant impact to our local community here and just really unaffordable for our ratepayer to be able to do that without some assistance. So any consideration, and then just how we're going to tackle this problem for the 9 different communities throughout Alaska, just some consideration for that. And then I would just like to make another plug as well for funding for our school systems to increase the funding for our schools. And then also for the Alaska Marine Ferry System, which is critical for Southeast Alaska and for Alaska in general. Just the services it provides for our communities here is vital for economic development. So appreciate your time today, and thank you for letting me speak.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today, and it's interesting on your cost escalation in Wrangell dealing with the disinfection. I think other cities are going to be facing the same, and the earlier expectation from Anchorage was about $1 billion. So I don't know what Anchorage is. We'll have to stay tuned here and keep track of that because it's a significant problem. We'll go now to Ketchikan. Mr. Tyler McNeil, please.
Hi, this is Tyler McNeil from Community Connections in Ketchikan, Alaska. So I work in human services and have for the last 14 years and support people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. I want to thank the legislature for directing Senior and Disability Services to develop a 5-year plan to eliminate the intellectual and developmental disability Medicaid wait list. That plan, you know, has been developed, and I just wanted to encourage the funding to make that plan a reality, to make those services accessible to the individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities who so desperately need those waivers. I know several individuals who come to mind who have been on the wait list for many, many years. And because it's a kind of crisis-driven system that relies on a high level of urgency, it's likely that they won't be drawn anytime in the near future. So I look forward to that wait list being eliminated and for those individuals having access to the supports they need. And I also wanted to advocate for the $15 million funding for the DD, the Developmental Disability Sustainability Plan, to help stabilize and support the home and community-based services. These programs are so important to keeping people in their tribes, families, and local communities, and providing them the supports they need to live as independently as possible in their own homes and communities. And so any funding and further support for the home and community-based service program, the reimbursement rates had not been kept up on for the last 12 years. And so seeing them getting the funding that they need to catch up with the times and to remain fiscally viable into the future is really important to me and the folks that we serve. So, yeah, and I appreciate you guys' consideration and all of the support in making sure that those important services are funded.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We're going to continue on in Ketchikan. We're going to pool the Juneau and Douglas testimony together here and have Senator Keel handle that here in a couple of minutes. So if you see yourself jumped over on the list, don't panic. We're rearranging the list a little bit here. We'll now go to Kathy Boiling. Ketchikan, please.
Hi, Hi, good morning. I'm calling to speak, this is Kathy Bowling in Ketchikan, calling to speak to the $635,000 request to be added to the UA budget. So I looked up who the individual members are, and I'm glad to see how representative this committee is, both rural and urban. I met you, Senator Stedman, when you came down for the opening of the new Ketchikan Public Library building. Ketchikan is my hometown, and I brought my children here from Nome so they could have a high school experience as I had had. Senator Olson, speaking of Nome, you may not remember, but when I wrote for the Nome Nugget, you flew me out to Little Diomede, landing on a runway of ice marked with four oil drums. So this committee is well aware of what it means to live in rural Alaska and how important it is for all residents to have access to reliable information and library services. And that's what this request will make possible. So speaking of possible, it is not possible to do more with less, or even the same with less, to meet the needs of Alaska residents, the students, the homeschooling families, the researchers, the writers, the parents, the business owners, and all others, the hundreds of thousands of Alaskans who use the Alaska Library Catalog and the statewide library electronic doorway. These times call for efficient, equitable access to the world of information across the digital divide, which is vital in a democracy, and that which SLED and the Alaska Library Catalog can deliver to all Alaskans with funding provided through the university library system. And I appreciate your time so much.
Okay. Senator Olson. Ms. Boiling, thank you very much for being active in this time of public accounting. I certainly remember the time going out to Diomede, and certainly the time I flew you out there. Thank you very much for participating.
Okay. Thank you.
Now we'll jump up to Cordova. Casey Kinsman, please.
All right. Good morning. Thank you. Our city manager just put this on my radar yesterday, so just want to thank Helen Hallworth for that. I know they've presented our city has presented some funding requests, and the one I want to touch on is what was requested there, and I've heard lots of money thrown out, so this one hopefully is a small change in comparison, is about $165,000 for our pool lining replacement. And you might think pool and parks and rec, but actually the pool does more for our community than that. It is a lifeline for our schools, especially our K through sixth grade. We've had right now a wonderful program established that 1 hour a week, these students have the opportunity to go into this pool, and it's not just a free playtime. This is a time where from kindergarten and on, they learn how to swim. They learn fundamental water safety tactics until they get to fourth, fifth grade, where they're learning how to flip a kayak. They're learning in canoe and how to swamp these things, how to do rescue, how to rescue their buddies, how to get help. And, you know, being in Cordova, surrounded by water, fresh and salt, this is actually a very, very important ask. And again, hopefully painting a decent picture for you. I know hopefully Helen can get on and speak more to some of our requests, but this is one that I know our community again, it's more than just a parks and rec request. So thank you for your time, everyone.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Well, now go to Whittier. Jamie Lone, please.
Resident of Whittier. Hi, my name is Jamie. I'm a full-time resident of Whittier. I was just calling in because I was really excited to see that the city of Whittier Harbor was selected as one of the municipal harbor matching grant funds, but I know that they are still finalizing the budget, and there's a chance that we might not be a part of that. Just wanted to remind everybody that Whittier is seeing over 550,000 vehicles entering annually, so that includes tour buses, thousands of trailered boats, just tons and tons of people hoping to start to utilize Prince William Sound. And the state of our harbor, specifically floats A, G, and H, are in dangerous disrepair to the point where if they are not repaired, they will be closed down, and that's a third of our harbor. Whittier, as everybody knows, super small place. We have less than 200 contributing taxpayers, so that basically means we're not going to be able to fund or repair this ourselves, and the Whittier Harbor is a lifeline with the state, with recreation, local Alaskan businesses, commercial business, research, safety, and, you know, if the docks can't be repaired quickly, we're going to be in real trouble here. So I just wanted to remind you guys that that's a project on the table. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony today. I'm going to pick up the next two, and then Senator Keel will come up and take our Juneau and in-room testimony. Mr. Nick Olzenk from Prince William Sound. Olzenk? Probably.
Olzenk, yes.
Okay. Go ahead and.
My name is Nick Olzenk. My name is Nick Olzenk, business owner at Prince William Sound Salt Company in the Whittier Harbor District. Also a berth holder in the Whittier Harbor. I'm a resident of Whittier part-time, and I'm also the chair of the Whittier Ports and Harbor Commission. To the tune that Jamie Lone just spoke, I'd just like to encourage and even urge the committee to fund the harbor matching grant. The failing and extremely dangerous harbor dock infrastructure in the Whittier Harbor, specifically speaking to harbor floats A, G, and H, that if not repaired immediately will likely have to be decommissioned, which will greatly adversely affect access to Prince William Sound for recreational users of South Central, and also cause many commercial operators to be possibly rehomed or worse. There's really no alternative plan B in the Whittier area for this type of infrastructure. And as we understand it, Whittier is the first name project for the Tier 2 grant, so it's already approved. If the Harbor grant is funded to $8.2 million, all three projects would be approved. If it's not funded, the economic impact this would have on the small community of Whittier would be unimaginable to me. So, again, just urging the committee to take into consideration funding the Harbor grant. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll now go down to Ketchikan. Jeannie Flanagan, please.
Hi, good morning. Hi, good morning, and thank you for your time. I want to thank you guys for the work you're doing for the waiver wait list. To just express, I have two kids on the waiver, and it was a three-year wait for us to access services that are just really critical for families, critical to get them the care and support that they need. And it not only helps that individual having to struggle with a disability, it helps their family go to work, it helps them out in the community, and it also just builds the communities. So I cannot stress enough how much access to services is so important to individuals with disability. Both my kids with autism have just really benefited on being able to get the waiver and just grow and be out there and participate in the community. Otherwise, without services, we would just be at home and I would be unable to work. So there would, it impacts more than just the individual. And just to reiterate what Heidi Young said, it does save the state money to have families with families in their home and be able to get that care and then just access the services.
Okay.
So I thank you.
Yes, but can you please introduce yourself for the record? So we got
your name. Janae Flanagan in Ketchikan. I'm a mother of two individuals with autism.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. I'll now turn it over to Senator Keel, who will take care of Juneau and surrounding areas and then in-room testimony.
Our next testifier is John Lamb. Mr. Lamb, if you would introduce yourself, name and affiliation, and proceed with your 2 minutes, please.
Thank you. Good morning. My legal name is John Lamb, but my friends and colleagues
know me as Jonas, and I live here in Juneau. Thanks for the opportunity to speak on behalf of a $635,000 amendment to the operating budget, or to the university portion of that budget, for the SLED databases and the Alaska Library Catalog. I'm the immediate past president of the Alaska Library Association, and advocating for full funding of these important statewide services has been a legislative priority of our professional association for several years now. I'm also the parent of two K-12 students here in Juneau who have significantly benefited from SLED resources like BrainPop and Live Homework Help, and have heavily utilized the Alaska Library Catalog to borrow materials from library collections from across the state in order to support their curiosity and their studies. In my role with the Alaska Library Association, I can speak to the immense value these two resources, SLED databases and the Alaska Library Catalog, represent to rural and small libraries from Uktiavik to Petersburg. These resources greatly amplify the services provided by the smallest libraries, and in doing so, contribute to increasing access and equity to early childhood literacy and education for the benefit of our entire state. The Alaska Library Catalog serves 92% of the Alaska population through membership by 92 public, tribal, academic, K-12, and specialized libraries. Absent of this funding, individual libraries and school districts and families can't afford to provide these services. The university budget is a logical home for this funding, as it empowers the university libraries to provide core collections in support of university academic programs, while also fulfilling the mission of service to the public for the benefit of those communities. I thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today, and I wish you a speedy resolution to this operating budget. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Jonas. We'll go next to Elise Tomlinson, calling in from the Island Kingdom of Douglas.
Hi, thank you, Senators. My name is Elise Tomlinson, and I'm the Dean of Libraries for the University of Alaska Southeast. I've been in that position for 13 years, but I've been working in Alaska libraries since I moved to Alaska to attend UAA in 1988. So I've had a long career in libraries, and including at the UAA, the Anchorage Public Libraries. So I'm also calling in, to support the $635,000 for the Alaska Statewide Libraries. And my colleagues Kathy Bowling and Ketchikan and Jonas Lam have both done a great job explaining why those resources are so important across the state. I'd like to take this time just to explain, as a library dean, how I've worked closely with Karen Jensen at UAS Libraries, the head of those libraries, and Steve Rollins at the UAA Consortium Library Dean, to be as fiscally responsible as we possibly can. We meet regularly to look at joint licensing and ways that we can expand access while reducing costs to the state. And it has been a pretty grueling few years, I have to say. We've had about a 30% cut to our budgets across the board, over $3 million. And it has been, as Kathy mentioned, increasingly difficult to do even the same amount with less. And so in order to sustain some of these services, which have created great efficiencies across the state, this additional funding is necessary. And just as an example, when I was paying for a license for the catalog on my own at UAS, it cost about $20,000 more a year than it did after I joined the joint catalog system. And the Juneau Public Libraries and the UAA, or the UAS libraries, were the first libraries to join with the UAA consortium and UAA public libraries at the start of the Alaska Library Network. So I have seen firsthand how these programs have saved money and expanded access, and I just really encourage that this funding is granted so that we can continue to do that, because it's going to be really bleak
if we can't do it. We're sort of out of options otherwise. So I appreciate your time, and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Dean Tomlinson. We have someone with a time crunch, so we'll come into the room for the next testifier, Joe Nelson. If you can come up and identify yourself, give us your 2 minutes, and then we'll finish up with folks online.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Joe Nelson, in your district, Senator Keel, just down the road. My name is Joe Nelson. I'm speaking today on behalf of Alaska Legal Services and co-chairs Hoffman and Stedman. Thank you for convening and helping us get a capital budget through the system here today. So it's a small capital budget request. It's a one-time request of $500,000 for Alaska Legal Services. I don't offer this up very often, but I have been I'm an attorney. That's something that hasn't been in the record, I don't think, but in Juneau for over 20 years now, and one of my jobs lately has been working with Alaska Legal Services as the president of the board, volunteer gig. So thank you for your support of legal services for the last 50 years. This request is a national impact request in the sense that it's a one-time request, and the Community Justice Worker Program has got a spotlight on it from around the entire country. I'd love to talk to you about our budget gap, but the gap that I'm focused on today is the justice gap. We know that it's huge in the country. We know that it's huge in Alaska, and we know about the dynamics of reaching all of our communities with our court systems and just access to justice in so many ways. But the Community Justice Worker Program is the first of its kind in the country, and this last summer, the Supreme Court approved a Rule 43.5, which allows sort of laypersons to go into the courtroom to advocate under the supervision of legal services team of attorneys on specific items. And this is just a transformational program that has 200 people that have already been through some type of training through legal services, but we need to continue to build it out. And a lot of the funding is already in place. $500,000 is the ask in the current budget. It's a one-time capital request for legal services to really kickstart this program that is going to help transform justice in all of Alaska. So we really appreciate your support over there. Sheesh.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Going back on the phones, Tom Bryce is our next testifier. Mr. Bryce, if you would give us your name, affiliation, in 2 minutes, please.
Yes, Senator Keel, Tom Bryce. I'm a resident of Juneau, past resident of Fairbanks. I'm affiliated with the University of Alaska Fairbanks Alumni Association, so I've got some words of advocacy for UAF and the UA system, but also want to speak on the need to have adequate funding for our state highways and airports and an adequate number of equipment operators to keep our roads safe, our roads and airports safe and clear. I know this committee is very supportive of the University of Alaska, you know, and you guys understand that a strong university supports a strong economy and serves all Alaska. The UA system's academic and research programs are critical to the state's economic recovery. UA makes high-quality, accessible, and affordable post-secondary education available across all Alaska. And with that, I'll close my remarks, and thanks for your hard work. Oh, one other thing. We got to make sure that we make meaningful advancement on addressing the university's deferred maintenance needs. That's a big issue. Anyway, folks, good luck, and take care.
Thank you for your testimony. Our next caller is Jim Ayers. Mr. Ayers, I believe you know the drill.
Good morning, Senator, and thank you and others for allowing me to speak, and thank you for your service. Public service is a hard job, which I'm familiar with. I live at 17019 Island View Drive in Juneau, Alaska. I'm speaking for myself, and I'm referring this morning to the proposal, as I understand it, of $5 million that would be used to capture the clean water authorities for the administration. 30 years ago, a few legislators came up with a similar idea of taking over water quality and downgrading some of the criteria for things like mining mixing zones. I won't have the time to tell you the whole story, but be glad to. The idea was to have a tool for relaxing rules in certain situations determined by who knows, and standards, relaxing standards that were provided and established essential to protecting waterways and fish. Governor Wally Hickel, Ben Grusendorf, the speaker at the time, got together with the Senate and agreed that it was a dangerous move and was not necessary. It was buying a problem. In Alaska, our economic, social, health, and well-being is inextricably linked to the health of our ecosystem, and that particularly includes our water quality. This has been true for people in Alaska time immemorial. It's a part of Alaska. It's in our DNA. Our fisheries, and particularly salmon, which are already in trouble for a variety of reasons, are dependent on water quality. Subsistence, sport, Alaskans, community, commercial fisheries all depend on the health of our water quality, and that's the home of the salmon. Not to mention the critical role salmon play in maintaining the river upland habitat that's essential for Alaska families and the well-being of our wildlife. Our jobs, commercial, sport, charter, visitor industry are all built on the health of our waters. Our communities, our families, our economy are dependent on our water quality. It ought not to be a tool for manipulating the system. I understand others are pushing for the state to take over those decisions. But the state, as I understand, is already struggling to fill jobs, retain employees, and meet your struggling effort to make ends meet. This is no time to drift off on dangerous trail, puts our families, communities, economy, and water quality. If there's an extra $5 million lying around, I would urge you to invest more in Alaska's embarrassing, underfunded, failing education system. This is no time to mess around with water quality. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Our next testifier is Rita Menzies. Ms. Menzies, if you would identify yourself, name and affiliation, please give us your 2 minutes of testimony.
Hi, my name is Rita Menzies. I have a son, age 26, who is severely impaired and requires 24/7 assistance, and we live in Juneau. Chandler is nonverbal, has autism, the CAS mutation, and a rare epilepsy syndrome called Lennox-Gastaut, which means that his seizures are hard to control. Chandler needs help with every aspect of his life, from communicating, eating and drinking, activities of daily living, to toileting and how to play. Yes, he's 26 and still working on how to play. Most importantly, he needs monitoring and assistance for safety as he can walk, but has between 20 to 50 seizures a month. He needs someone there to pick him up when he falls, give him emergency meds when the seizures don't stop. We need your help in supporting and funding the $15 million for 1 year of the DD sustainability plan. I am grateful that this funding is being directed and considered. This funding can make a difference in the quality of life for our kids and adults with disabilities. It can make the difference between isolation and socialization. We were successful this past year to move Chandler into his own residence with 24/7 assistance, and we need to be able to support the staff so that he has consistent staffing for his safety as well as maintaining his daily schedule. I would like to thank you for your time and diligence over the years in helping to serve those who have disabilities. Thank you for having the wisdom to look forward and require a 5-year plan to eliminate the wait list. We are one of the families that Heidi Young spoke about. We waited for 6 to 8 years for the waiver for a child who was total assist. It is life-changing to receive services, mentally, physically, socially, and financially. I would like to reiterate everything Heidi spoke about. I can only imagine the difficult job it is to make the decisions regarding the budget and funding for the state. We all deserve to have a life worth living. If you support this funding, you will make a difference in the lives of many of those who cannot speak for themselves. Feel free to contact me if you ever have more than 2 minutes to talk about the needs that our family members need, that our family members who have disabilities need. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Menzies, and thanks for all you do for Chandler and your family. Next on the telephone is Gershon Cohen, and then we'll go back and to the folks in the room. Mr. Cohen, if you would do name and affiliation and proceed, please.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Can you hear me okay?
Just fine.
Hello, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Keel, for this opportunity to testify. My name is Gershon Cohen. I live in Haines. I'm a 40-year resident of Southeast Alaska, and I've been working on water quality issues for more than 30 years here. Actually, Jim Ayers, the issue he mentioned over 30 years ago is what got me into doing this work. I'm here to talk about the fact that the House has appropriated or has suggested in their budget that we should spend $5 million to take over the 404 program from the Army Corps of Engineers. I would urge you to not support that. We have far better places to put that $5 million. Back in 2006, when the state, when DEC took over the 402 program, there were promises made about taking on staffing and having the funding and the training to adequately implement that part of the Clean Water Act that had to do with surface water discharges and EPA. They have never fulfilled those responsibilities, and I sincerely doubt that they would be able to do that with the 404 program from the Corps. It would take far more money than what's being allocated, and we don't have nearly the staff or the training to adequately implement that program. So, again, I would urge the Senate Finance Committee, with all due respect, to find a better place to put $5 million than into taking over the 404 program. Education, there's just so many different places where we could use that money and it would be better spent. Again, thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cohen. We appreciate your testimony. We'll come into the room. Ms. Brenda Stanfill.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Brenda Stanfill. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I'm going to read to you because I can never do well on time. Our network is made up of 23 regional programs providing emergency shelter, advocacy, legal services, and support to victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. Many programs also provide community prevention services to address the root causes of violence and also services for those who are abusing, often referred to as batterers intervention programs. These programs provide educational services to allow individuals who are abusing their family to learn new skills. I'm here to talk to you about HB 39, specifically the Department of Public Safety, the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Victim Services Grants Line. The direct services provided by programs to victims of crime are a core component of the criminal justice system response. Victims of crime often find themselves without a safe place to stay, a lack of funds to engage in the services necessary to heal from the trauma caused by the victimization, and faced with the daunting process of legal hurdles and challenges as the case against the perpetrator moves through the system. The services provided by our programs assist with safety and support during this time and then as long as it's needed. These programs have had the same amount of funding for 5 years while their expenses have continued to increase. During this time, the funding in the Department of Public Safety CDVXA grants line available for the program services has been made up of a patchwork of funds. This includes federal appropriations, one-time increments of general funds, COVID relief dollars, along with other federal and state dollars. It is our hope that we can find a more consistent way to fund our services to crime victims. Our request this year is that you move the $3 million one-time increment from general funds in the Department of Public Safety CDVXA grants line to $3 million of general funds in CDVSA's base funding. We are also requesting that you look at a one-time increment to assist with the increased cost of operating the buildings that they must have. A one-time increment of $300,000 was provided last year. That was not provided again this year, but their expenses have not gone down as we would have hoped they would have with gas going down. It doesn't seem to connect with the oil prices. We also want to thank the governor for recognizing the need to provide additional funding for prevention and batterers intervention programs as in the original budget presented by the governor. By funding these additional services, it allows us to begin working on all three critical areas, which we have to work on all three critical areas if we're really going to bring down these numbers. We must provide direct services, but we also need to do prevention and work on our offender accountability. So thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Our next testifier in the room is Jen Griffiths.
Jen Griffiths, Public Policy Manager for THREAD. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on the operating budget today. THREAD is Alaska's Child Care Resource and Referral Organization. We're a private nonprofit that's statewide and has served Alaska for over 35 years. We're also a proud member of the Alaska Early Childhood Advocacy Group. THREAD strongly supports and encourages investment across the early childhood sector, including funding for Head Start, Best Beginnings, Help Me Grow, and Parents as Teachers. Additionally, we'd like to thank the committee for supporting expanded access to postpartum Medicaid, an important support for young children and families. But today, I want to talk to you about childcare. A robust, high-quality childcare system supports the development of young children, providing a foundation for lifelong success. It's also an economic driver and an essential support to working families and businesses. Increased investment in childcare is needed in order to achieve these benefits for children, families, and communities. Childcare in Alaska, which has been fragile for years, is struggling. Early educators are leaving the field for jobs with higher wages and better benefits, causing childcare businesses across the state to close their doors. As a result, parents who already pay as much for childcare each month as they do for housing are struggling to find and afford the childcare that is available. The positive impact of federal relief funding that was distributed to the childcare sector during the pandemic demonstrates that public investment in childcare can help safeguard this critical sector. But the continued struggles facing childcare demonstrate the need for immediate investment this coming fiscal year. An additional targeted investment of $15 million would increase wages for early educators during fiscal year 24, providing critical direct support to both childcare programs and early educators while larger policy and planning work takes place. Without this bridge funding, Alaska will likely face a continued decline in the number of early educators, additional closures of childcare programs, and workforce challenges across multiple sectors. We urge you to support this direct investment in childcare in this year's operating budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griffiths. Next in the room, Blue Scheibler. Ms. Scheibler, if you would give us your name and affiliation and your 2 minutes of testimony, please.
Thank you. Blue Scheibler, Juneau, Alaska. I'm the executive director for the Association for the Education of Young Children in Southeast Alaska. We're a nonprofit that provides various services for children, families, and child care providers in the region. Jen is really hard to follow. I don't have a lot to add about the supports we need for the early education sector that she didn't already say. And so I would just provide the simple message. As a 25-year resident of Alaska, I would happily give up my PFD and pay an income tax if it was a trade-off for a budget that supported children, families, educators, including child care providers, and other Alaskan citizens that need social supports from their government. Thank you.
Ms. Scheibler. Senator Olson.
Ms. Scheibler, I guess I was checking to see if you could emphasize maybe more the child care needs that are here in the state, especially across the state of Alaska, so we're well aware of that, and maybe fill in some of the details that some of us that are less than familiar with.
Sure. Thanks for that question, Senator Olson. You know, in the past several years, child care programs have been closing down in the state. We've lost 20% of our child care programs since 2018. And before that, Alaska was already considered a child care desert. After the pandemic, and we had some pandemic era funding from the federal government, it helped to stabilize those programs. It also helped to increase wages for providers. Those funds are now gone, and we're starting to see wages drop. And so the concern is that if something isn't done this year with this budget for child care provider wages specifically, more programs are going to close.
Okay. Thank you very much for that update.
Thank mm-hmm. you. I think we'll do one more in the room, and then we'll go back to the LIOs around the state. We'll have Katie Capozzi. It was going to come out. I just had to kick it out a little harder.
That's fine. It happens. Co-chairs Hoffman, Olson, Stedman, and members of the Senate Finance Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Katie Capozzi, and I proudly serve as the President and CEO of the Alaska Chamber of Commerce. I testify today in support for the state assuming primacy of Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. The Alaska Chamber was founded in 1953, which means we are celebrating our 70th anniversary this year, and we're the state's largest business advocacy organization. Our mission is to promote a healthy business environment in Alaska. The Chamber has more than 700 members and represents businesses of all sizes and industries from across the state, representing 58,000 Alaskan workers and $4.6 billion in wages. The Chamber has a long-standing position in support of increasing responsible natural resource development by improving the efficiencies of the permitting process and gaining access to our resources. To that end, we thank the members of the legislature that signed on to the bipartisan coalition letter sent to our congressional delegation on April 3rd, urging efficiencies in the permitting process. One short excerpt from that letter states, "As our congressional leaders, we ask you to advocate in favor of reducing burdensome regulations, delaying the permitting process, and to seek opportunities to streamline the federal review process for the betterment of both Alaskans and the environment." The Alaska Chamber agrees wholeheartedly, and we encourage our state leaders to seize this opportunity to streamline the process by assuming primacy of the 404 program. As identified in the feasibility study requested by the legislature, state primacy of 404 would result in timelier and better coordinated permitting processes without compromising current regulatory standards and requirements. It would also allow for a greater ability to tailor policies and procedures to Alaska's unique conditions. In closing, there have been significant federal administrative and legislative actions that have negatively impacted Alaska's businesses and overall investment climate. By providing the support needed to assume the 404 program, the legislature can bring some desperately needed stability back to Alaska. A state-run program is accountable to Alaskans, and the legislature can and will assure that Alaska has control of its permitting priorities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. And you must have timed it. You're right on 2 minutes. We're now going to jump up to Kodiak. Scott Arndt. Kodiak.
Thank you, Senator Stedman, and all committee finance members. My name is Scott Arndt, and I'm a member of the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly. A few things that I'd like to touch on. One is the base student allocation. Please continue with the proposed $1,000 BSA increase. The Kodiak School District and all other school districts throughout Alaska need help this year. Please increase the BSA and not a one-time appropriation. Two, Alaska Marine Highway. Please continue with proposed funding, critical to communities that are served by the Alaska Ferry System. Three, please continue with the community assistance funding. This is a crucial source of revenue for all small communities on Kodiak Island and throughout rural Alaska. And speaking for myself on this next issue and not the Kodiak Island Borough, I agree with Member Jim Avery, Speaker, who had talked about not funding the $5 million for the water quality takeover. Alaska DEC cannot handle what they are currently mandated to do. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll now go to Valdez. Janice Johnson, please.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Janice Johnson. I'm the board treasurer of Advocates for Victims of Violence located in Valdez. I'm here to testify in favor of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault funding within the Department of Public Safety section of HB 39. Currently, the budget includes $3 million from a one-time increment of general funds and $3.5 million federal appropriation through a request secured by Senator Murkowski. Without these one-time increments, services for victims would be $6.5 million below previous year funding. This funding is critically needed, and I support adding this funding to the base funds of CDVSA. As we all know, inflation has been significant, and operating a shelter has the cost of operating a shelter have increased significantly. The cost of electricity, fuel, and food have all increased. At AVV, our utility bills have gone up from around $2,900 per month to almost $5,000 a month. Our monthly food expenses have gone from $2,400 a month to over $3,500 a month. These are just a few examples. Providing a safe shelter to victims and survivors is one of the primary services that AVV provides. We will not be able to provide the needed level of service without this funding. As I'm sure you all know, Alaska has the third highest per capita rate of domestic violence and sexual assault in the nation. Stable funding is necessary to continue to provide these critical services to victims and survivors. Providing services to victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, child abuse, and other interpersonal violence is a necessary part of the of an appropriate criminal justice response. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We'll stay in Valdez. Angela Smith, please.
Good morning. My name is Angela Smith, and I am a survivor of domestic violence that has been receiving assistance and services from advocates of victims of violence here in Valdez. Experiencing domestic violence is a very scary thing, and you never plan to find yourself in that kind of situation. My life changed dramatically when I sought services from advocates of victims of violence. They provided my children and myself with a safe place in time of crisis where we had nowhere to go, no family, no support system, and no money. They even were kind enough to extend my stay when I was having a hard time looking for affordable housing in Valdez. It's very limited here. And they provided us with food. They referred us to counseling, accompanied me during my judicial proceedings. And there were times where I was emotionally drained and depressed, and they were never judgy and always supported me in my decisions and made me feel very welcome. Without AVV support, I would not be able to accomplish the goals I've achieved today. My children are doing very well. My oldest is graduating from high school, while my middle child and youngest child are on the high honor roll. Had it not been for advocates of victims of violence, I probably would be starving and living in my car. There are many families like this in Valdez where we... Please continue to help AVV provide funding for families like mine who help us survive the crime of domestic violence when others look away. I'm just one of the many families here who needs the services that AVV provides. Thank you for your time. Have a good day.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll now jump over to Sitka. Matthew Jackson, please.
Hello, my name is Matthew Jackson. I'm calling on behalf of myself today. I will call attention to some written comments, a group petition I submitted on behalf of Southeast Alaska Conservation Council on writing last night. But my testimony today is about two programs, the $5 million allocated for DNR to take over Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. That issue has been considered many times before by this legislature, and every time we look closely at it, we seem to realize that it is going to cost a lot more than we think, and that it looks like a big boondoggle, and there's no reason to pay for something that we currently get for free. There's a reason that most states that have looked at assuming 404 primacy have decided not to take that program over from the federal government. It's expensive, it's complicated, and the federal government will do it for us for free. You've heard from a lot of other people where we do need money in the budget, and I think pretty much anywhere else, from education to ferries to survivors of domestic abuse and violence, would all be worthy causes, more worthy than 404 primacy to move that $5 million towards. But I'd also like to lift up one program that could benefit from that $5 million a lot, and that is the Renewable Energy Fund. The Renewable Energy Fund is a proven winning investment for the state of Alaska. Every year, communities that have received Renewable Energy Fund dollars collectively save approximately $160 million on diesel costs. thanks to the renewable energy projects that they have built with support from the Renewable Energy Fund. The budget that was sent over to you from the House includes a pitiful $1.4 million for the Renewable Energy Fund, which, as I understand it, is barely enough to keep the lights on at that in those offices. So the recommended project list from Alaska Energy Authority for this year's cycle, it includes $25 million worth of projects, and you can do the math, $1.4 million will not get the state anywhere on those much-needed projects that will save communities and the state a lot of money. Lowering these energy costs can fuel economies in rural communities where the high price of energy can stifle any economic development I'll conclude my testimony there and encourage you to move that $5 million away from 404 Primacine towards the Renewable Energy Fund. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We're now going to stay in Sitka. Go to Cliff Richter, please.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Stedman, Hoffman, Olson, and members of the Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Cliff Richter, and I am the Executive Director for Baranoff Island Housing Authority, or BIHA. BIHA is the tribally designated housing entity for Sitka Tribe of Alaska in Sitka, Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd like to speak to you about the impact that the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation programs have had on BIHA, specifically the AHFC Supplemental Housing Development Grant Program, which is currently proposed to receive $0 of funding in the draft capital budget. That's after several years of steady funding. The HFC Supplemental Housing Development Grant Program provides up to 20% of development funding for BIHA's HUD-funded affordable housing projects in Sitka. At BIHA, the HFC Supplemental Housing Program has been a significant contributor to both single-family housing and multifamily housing development in Sitka in recent years. BIHA has used this funding, which has been at around $250,000 per year to BIHA in recent years, to construct at least one or two single-family housing units each year, and it is only possible because of the portion of the projects paid for by AHFC supplemental, funding that can be used for access roads, building pads, utilities, and energy efficiency-related items. Thanks in large part to the AHFC supplemental housing program, 40 housing units have been constructed in the last two decades in the form of both single-family and multifamily housing. 75 families were housed as a result of these projects over the last 20 years. BIHA has been applying for a slew of federal competitive grants to develop a much larger housing project, and that has not yet come to fruition. This highlights the need for us to chip away at our one or two housing units per year until and try to hold steady until a larger project can be funded. Anticipated growth of the local Coast Guard station and the planned search hospital expansion increases the need for housing construction in Sitka. The tourism industry here is great for the economy, but it also creates a huge strain on the local housing market, due in large part to out-of-town second homeowners or snowbirds and the rising trend of short-term rentals. And the housing strain is especially severe and realized for those lower-income working-class families that are in dire need for housing or desperate to escape overcrowded or unsafe conditions in one of Sitka's numerous dilapidated manufactured homes, most of which that are 20 years old and beyond their useful life.
Mr. Director, could I get you to finish up, please? You're over time.
Thank you. Okay. One more thing. BIHA is one of the...
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Now we're going to jump up to Cordova. Christine Carpenter, please.
Good morning, committee chairs and members of the committee. Thanks very much for taking the time to take testimony from all of us. I would like to touch on a few operating budget issues. Guess I should introduce myself, Christian Carpenter from Cordova. I'm speaking for myself and also as a member of the Cordova City Council. So the points I wanted to touch on are with regard to the state budget and the idea of funding, assuming primacy for the Section 404 permitting function. I would strongly urge you not to fund that for the reasons that Jim Ayers talked about earlier. He spoke to it really well, but clean water is critical for our state's economy, and I don't, from my experience as a DEC grantee in the past, for many years, I don't see the agency having the capacity to take this on, and I think the investment would be, that needed would be enormous. I do support an increase in the BSA amount to catch up schools around the state on their funding levels. I echo comments that were made earlier about the critical funding for our Alaska Marine Highway System ferry service. It's a really critical part of our Prince William Sound economy. And Cordova has a request in the capital budget for $300,000, I believe, for a pool liner, which might sound kind of, I don't know, what's the word, frivolous maybe, folks might say, but our pool is an enormous critical recreational asset to our community for teaching kids in a fishing community how to swim and for having recreation options in a community that has, as you all also experience, long, dark, rainy winters. So thank you for considering that. And I also just want to urge the committee to keep in mind that all of the discussion around the PFD means sacrificing things that can get funded in our rural communities. You know, funding a full PFD means giving up on other things, and it hurts all of us all across the state. It hurts our economies, and I think we're seeing out-migration because of quality of life and the expense of living. And so I urge you to take that into account when putting together the operating budget. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you for your service.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Now we're going to jump down to Craig. Tiffany Mills, please.
Good morning. Thank you for hearing my testimony. My name is Tiffany Mills, and I'm the Executive Director for Helping Ourselves Prevent Emergency Hope on Prince of Wales Island. We offer domestic violence, sexual assault and advocacy, food, homeless and legal assistance, transportation, and other services to those in need. I'm testifying for HB 39, CDBSA's victim services budget in the Department of Public Safety. I thank the committee for recognizing victim services as an important element of crime response in Alaska. I'd like to thank Senator Stedman for his support of victim services and hope on Prince of Wales. We never closed due to COVID, and the numbers of people who sought help from us increased each year. In 2022, we provided victim services for approximately 130 adults, which is double the number we assisted in 2018 with fewer staff. Without the one-time increment funds of $3 million and the $3.5 million from the federal appropriation through Senator Murkowski's request that's in CDBSA's budget, there'd be a shortage from last year's funding. And we're appreciative that this allows our victim services providers to receive consistent funding from previous years, but the costs we're facing in rural Alaska are higher and are continuing to increase. For example, bacon, as of a month ago, was $21 a pound, a can of Spam, $9, and lettuce is $13. We're also working with staffing shortages because our agency just began offering health insurance to full-time employees last year to compete with other employers on the island. We're being very conservative in our hiring practices. The insurance costs us $4,000 a month, and we don't want to be priced out of the market and have to cut that benefit to employees. And this is a consideration because our premiums already went up $400 a month this year. We hope you can find more available funds to support victim services so that we can continue to assist those in need. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Well, now jump up to Yakutat. Mr. John Erickson, please.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you so much, Senator Stedman. You're our favorite senator. I wanted to make a few comments and just let you know what it's like to being on a small coastal town, isolated. First of all, I'm very excited about all the match we're seeing and all the programs and construction money, but I meant to say the match is, I'm not so excited. The match is a little bit overwhelming. For a small community of 600-700, it makes it almost impossible for us to look at some of these programs. We have no ferries this summer, because of the Kennecott and not being have enough people to man it, which is very disappointing. And we applied for the ports grant, which we got, but because of the increase in costs, our costs for our port went from $7.3 million to $12 million, so we're really scrambling to try and figure out where we're going to come up with the base of that funding. Anyway, thank you so much for your time, and I think what you're doing is wonderful.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony and your support, Mr. Arthur. Now we'll jump further west. We'll go to Kodiak. Mindy Pruitt, please.
Good morning, Senators. For the record, my name is Mindy Pruitt. I'm the Executive Director for the Kodiak Island Housing Authority. We are the tribally designated housing entity for 9 tribes on Kodiak Island. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to provide support for the Alaska Housing Finance Committee Supplemental Housing Development Grant Program. Kodiak Island Housing Authority has participated in the Senior Housing Development Program, funding which currently provides housing for 32 families that are 55 plus years of age or older. KEHA recently funded the Kodiak Island Housing Needs Assessment that identified the need for additional housing and demonstrated the growth specifically for our elders and our aging population in our community. I urge the committee to consider funding vital housing programs in FY 2024 through the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation program. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We'll stay in Kodiak and go to Penny Lample, please. Lample.
Hi, my name is Penny Lample, and I am the shelter coordinator for the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center. First, I'd like to thank the committee members, the Senate committee members, for all the hard work that you have done and that you're continuing to do with the budgets to help fight crime in Alaska. This has to be a very difficult job I would not want. I'm testifying on the HB 39 Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault budget in the Department of Public Safety Services to Victims. We support the $3 million one-time increment from the general funds and the $3.5 million federal appropriate funds to be moved into the CDBSA baseline funding grant line. This would help us tremendously with our victim services, and it would help us keep our families safe and keep a safe place for them. This will allow our victim service programs like us to have the same amount of funding as the previous years if this is able to be passed. We are a village. We are an island that services 7 villages. We're a rural island. We have 7 rural villages. We are the only victim shelter for domestic violence and sexual assault. We have our own sexual assault exam room. This is the only place for people to get services. We have helped so many families. As everybody has said, the prices have gone up for everything, heating, insurance, food, everything. We just really appreciate you guys taking this into consideration and helping this funding go through. Thank you so much for your hard work.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll continue to stay in Kodiak. April, Councilor, please.
Chimai, hello, and thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is April Counselor, and I'm a member of the Shunap Tribe of Kodiak, as well as the Executive Director of the Aleutic Heritage Foundation, which is more commonly known as the Aleutic Museum. I'm calling to request your support for our CAPSIS funding request on our renovation and expansion project. Like many other organizations conducting capital projects, the rising cost of construction has created a funding gap for for our project, which has been planned for over 15 years and breaks ground this summer. Kodiak visitors and community members have requested additional public space for exhibits, workshops, and our art store. Our collections room reached capacity over a decade ago, and we now care for over 250,000 objects, the majority of which are owned by others, such as the State of Alaska, the U.S. Coast Guard, the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge, and private landowners. The Aleutic Museum is state-certified and nationally accredited and serves as the regional native cultural hub for artist economic development, cultural education, tourism, and indigenous human remains repatriation. I humbly request your support for this one-time request.
Thank you for your testimony today. Now we'll go to Cordova. Helen Howarth.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Helen Howarth. I'm the city manager in Cordova, and I wanted to thank all of you on the Senate for your reasonable approach to this year's budget. I think what you propose at this moment in time recognizes the needs of our community and our entire state. It's always disheartening to see so much focus put on the PFD with little regard to other investments the state can and should make to help our residents. The long-term impacts of infrastructure investments, the community assistance program, school bond debt reimbursement, increases to school district funding, those are all resources needed by our community to serve our residents and should play the largest role in the calculus that is the basis for your work on the budget. The House budget that proposes a big PFD payment requiring a dip into the constitutional budget reserve and causing the elimination of state services and critical community investments, quite frankly, is folly. We will benefit, our entire community will benefit more from investments in Cordova's swimming pool capital requests, school bond debt reimbursement, increasing the BSA, revenue sharing, than we will ever benefit from a large PFD. So I look forward to your budget prevailing as you work in collaboration with the House to come up with a consensus budget, and I hope that you will do your jobs and make sure that there aren't cuts made to communities. I appreciate you for your hard work. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Now we'll jump back out west to Kodiak Island, go to Old Harbor. Thylas Clough, please. Silas Clough, are you? Oh.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, hi. I'm Silas Clough. I'm from Old Harbor, Alaska. I'm a mother, grandmother. And I really would like to know, I would really like for you guys to support the BSA increase. It's very important for our village schools. We struggle as it is with cuts, and I just think it's very important that you continue to support rural education because we are the heart of Alaska. I appreciate all the hard work that you guys are doing, and I just would like to give you my concern and my thanks for all that you do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clough, for your testimony today. We'll come back southeast a little bit. Elizabeth Figus. Ms. Figus, if you could give us your name and affiliation and your two-minute testimony.
Thank you to the committee. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Figus. I am a resident of Juneau, and I'm calling in today for two reasons. The first one is I want to urge all of you to reject funding for the state to take over the Clean Water Act 404 permitting program. To me, it makes no sense to take on something that will cost the state more money and has proven in other areas to lead to negative impacts on water quality. And in that same vein of thought, I'm also interested in urging you in whatever way you can to support the Alaska Marine Highway System as it was in previous decades, meaning larger ferries that run more often across all the coastal communities. As a Juneau resident, I find it frustrating to have to take small regional airlines to visit small rural communities for my job when I would prefer to take the Alaska Marine Highway, but because of the reduced schedules and reduced number of vessels, it is harder and harder every year to actually utilize that system. So I just wanted to urge you all to consider that. And then revisiting again the Clean Water Act provisions, I just cannot stress enough how important it is for us to use resources that are currently available from the federal government for things like maintaining our clean water, and also to remove some of the actual kind of political swings of trying to take this on as a state government to allow the Clean Water Act to do what it was meant to do and keep our waters clean and safe. As a commercial fisherman, I'm very concerned about trying to maintain clean water for salmon fisheries in the state of Alaska. So with that, I will thank you all for your time. I really, really appreciate your willingness to take public testimony on this, and I wish you all a wonderful spring.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Figgis. Next up is Aaron Brakel. Mr. Brakel, if you would introduce yourself and give your comment, please.
Yes, hi, good morning. My name is Aaron Brakel. I live here in Juneau, Alaska. I want to thank the co-chairs and the Senate Finance Committee members for this important opportunity to testify today. I'm calling in opposition to the shoestring $5 million budget for the state of Alaska to take over 404 permitting. Other states have approached this idea, and they found it's far, far more expensive than they initially estimate. This is an ongoing annual cost out of operating budget general fund that we really need those dollars elsewhere. I want to speak briefly to concerns about 402 permitting, the point source discharge permitting that DEC does now, and I'm going to address specifically the NIBLAC project in southern southeast Alaska on Prince of Wales Island. In 2006, a project was permitted that was supposed to be a two-year project. They knew they were going to hit potentially acid-generating rock. They put it out on the surface. They were going to return it back underground. When the company was ready to sell at the end of the two-year project after an economic downturn, they asked DEC if they could leave that project, leave that waste rock exposed and open on the surface. That waste rock pile began the acidification process and began leaching toxic metals out of that pile, which are now being discharged under a point source discharge permit allowed and then expanded by the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. This is just, it's just kind of outrageous and completely inappropriate. So I would like to say they make some bad decisions in that department, and we shouldn't give them another permitting authority when it's already being handled elsewhere at no cost to Alaska. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today. That concludes everybody that is so far called in. I think what we'll do here is take a 15-minute recess for the committee, and then I'll come back in and see if anybody else is online. If we get more call-ins, we'll call everybody back up and take care of it. So we'll stand at recess until 20 minutes to 11. We are in recess. come back on the record. We have one person that's come into the room to testify. She can come forward, please. Tamara Ben-Yosef. Yes, yes. And then if you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and then you've got a couple minutes, but you're the last person and the only one on the list. So if you go a couple seconds longer, the world won't end. And then I'll conclude the meeting after the testimony here, unless somebody else happens to call in between now and then.
Sounds good. Thank you. Nice to see
you. If you could start by introducing yourself, who you represent, and take it away.
All right. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. My name is Tamar Ben-Yosef, and I am the executive director for an organization called the All Alaska Pediatric Partnership. We're a statewide nonprofit, also known as A2P2. And I am representing the organization, our program, Help Me Grow Alaska, but really all families caring for children in the state of Alaska. I'm here to express support for HB 39 and HB 41, mental health and operating expenses related to health and behavioral health. And I just want to help, I want to talk very briefly about our program, Help Me Grow Alaska. We provide resource and referral and navigation services for families with kids to help them connect to the services that they need and to be there with them along that journey and navigating systems. And whether they're in crisis or not, navigating services when you have a new diagnosis or when there's basic needs like housing involved or food insecurity can be very challenging for families in Alaska, especially if they don't live in South Central Alaska. And so I just want to read a very quick example of some of the work that we do and help me grow, because my support is, I didn't specify, you know, what specific fundings were in support of, because my our perspective where we come from is that we need to be looking at the continuum of care for children from prenatal pregnant mothers to 26 when they get off their parents' insurance, because we have many good programs and services in the state that are doing excellent work with the capacity they have, but what we're not focusing is on how these programs and services can work together to create a better continuum. So when a child is conceived, how do we set them on the best trajectory for life? And it does take that coordination to get to that point. And so bear with me while I just read this very quickly. So this is, we operate a call center through Help Me Grow Alaska, where we have family support specialists. We work very closely with individual communities to provide the service in the best way that works for them. We had a family in Dillingham, a mom with two children, both on the autism spectrum. She relocated to Anchorage in the midst of a struggle with substance abuse and passed away due to an overdose. Her kids were placed in foster care in Anchorage, but desperately wanted to be able to return to Dillingham. One of the children was placed with grandma with no services in place. With the support of the school staff, pediatrician, and Help Me Grow Alaska navigating resources, he was connected with Special Olympics in Dillingham, therapeutic supports virtually, and wraparound supports in school. He's excelling, and grandma has the support she needs to keep him in his home community. The other child, unfortunately, had to remain in care in Anchorage with an aunt who also died suddenly due to medical complications. He's now in therapeutic foster home in Anchorage, separated from his family because the level of services needed for him are intense and not available in the Dillingham area. Help Me Grow is able to report on these gaps along with the work that A2P2 does on the more of the systems level to help get the conversation going and support funding to expand on the ground resources in the areas that need them. So this is one instance that I just requested for my staff to send me a quick example. We have many more of these from communities all around the state and are happy to share any data that you need, but we support funding for childcare, we support funding for education, all of the above, but really we support sitting down and thinking how we as a state can support that continuum and how these programs can work better together to address families' needs from the moment a child is conceived and to adulthood. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony coming in. There's no other folks that have signed up this morning, even though we're half hour past the deadline. We wanted to hang around a little bit just in case. So this will conclude this morning's meeting. We're going to reconvene at 1:30. We'll hear this afternoon from the region of Fairbanks, all around the interior and the Copper River Valley. So we'll reconvene at 1:30 and continue our public hearing and public input on the FY24 budgets. We are adjourned at 10:48 a.m. We are adjourned. Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. It's 1:33 p.m., April 20th, 2023. With me today is Co-Chair Senator Hoffman, Co-Chair Senator Olson, Senator Bishop, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick's on the way, Senator Stedman here, and Senator Wilson is excused. He's out of state for business. This afternoon, we're going to be continuing our public testimony on House Bill 39, which is the fiscal year 24 operating budget, which starts the 1st of July, runs for 12 months. Also included in that discussion could be House Bill 41, the mental health budget for FY24, and also Senate Bill 41, the capital budget. So the public is welcome to testify on any of those three bills, but please keep it to those pieces of legislation, not other legislation in and around the building, because that's not what we're working on today. And please also stay within a two-minute limit, and that will be appreciated and more gives a little more respect to other fellow Alaskans who are online trying to call in and get their testimony on record. So if everybody sticks to the two-minute limit, it's just preferred, or even shorter. Also, please keep, you know, your comments succinct as possible. It makes a easier impression or a more a lasting impression on the committee members here than if we have to try to decipher what you're telling us to figure out if you're for something or against something. And with that, this afternoon we're going to have phone conversations with folks from Fairbanks and the interior and in and around that area, along with the Copper River Valley. And what I'd like to do is have Senator Bishop come forward here in the chair position and start today. He is the senator from Fairbanks at the finance table. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. First up from Fairbanks is we have the honor of having our Mayor of Fairbanks, Mr. David Cruz, in the audience today. Mayor Cruz, if you could come up and put yourself on the record, sir. Good to see you again and start your testimony.
Good to see you. Thank you for allowing me to be here. My name is David Cruz, Mayor of the City of Fairbanks. I come here on behalf of the city as a capital request of $3 million to help us knock down the Polaris building. A little background is the Polaris building is a 97,000 11-story structure that's been abandoned since the year 2000. It was condemned by the City of Fairbanks in 2012. We took over the ownership of it from abatement of taxes in 2018. I've been working on this project for 8 years. Why am I here? In 2018, the EPA funded a Brownsfield survey for me, and we identified in a 578-page report $2.3 million worth of contamination. So we looked at the project of $10 million. Senator Murkowski, through the EPA, funded the $10 million project for us. The EPA giveth, the EPA taketh away. In their Brownsfield survey, they never looked for PCB contaminations. We found that the 97,500-square-foot structure was painted in 1952 with PCB contaminants in the paint thinner. They've leached into the paint a 16th to a 32nd of an inch. With that contamination, our budget went out the door, and we now have to send all that concrete out to wherever the contractor sends it, either to Oregon or to Idaho. So regrouping worked well with the EPA in getting everything done. The City of Fairbanks were committed to $1.5 million of our capital budget. The Fairbanks North Star Borough has committed to $1.5 million in tippage fees. So I have the City of Fairbanks, the United States government, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, all invested in this. Now I would like to have the state of Alaska invest in this. We've put out bids. We have the annex coming down starting next week. It'll be down by May 7th. It's a one-story portion of it, 8,000 square feet. So no matter what, we're bringing that down, and then we'll see. We'll put out bids in June or July and start the work on deconstructing the tower, 11 stories, in September, depending on the funding and depending on the monies that we have. No matter what, with the monies that we have, we will gut the building and remove all the contaminants that we can except for the concrete. So that's why I'm here. I never asked for anything personally in my life, so this is sort of different for me. I usually do things for people as a mayor or as a member of the Prues family. So being down here and asking on behalf of the city of Fairbanks for help is just out of my bailiwick. But I appreciate the time that you've given me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Prues, and thanks for coming down.
Thank you.
All right. Next, we're going to go to Fairbanks to the LIO. Kara Carlson from the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. Can you hear us? If you can, put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Hi, my name is Kara Carlson. I'm the Deputy Director and current Acting Director at the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living, and I'm testifying for the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault budget in the Department of Public Safety, specifically to services for victims. Thank you for recognizing victim service as a part of our response to crime in Alaska. Currently in the budget, there is an amount of $3 million from a one-time increment of general funds and a $3.5 million federal appropriation through a request from Senator Murkowski. Without these one-time increments, services for victims would be $6.5 million short from previous year's funding. We support this funding. While we appreciate that one-time increments allow victim service providers the same amount of funding as previous years, our costs have not stayed the same. Our utility and energy costs have increased significantly in the past few years, but our funding has not. Thank you for your effort to address the issues of one-time funding and the lack of additional funds to meet the increased cost of providing services to victims, and I hope that you are able to find more so that services can continue. I also want to talk to support the increase in the operating mental health budget bills that impact mental health trust beneficiaries. I also support the increase in funding for the homeless assistance program and the special needs housing grants, both of which help move survivors and individuals struggling in our communities into long-term and stable housing. Lastly, I want to talk about the importance of recognizing the need for additional work in the areas of violence prevention and accountability of offenders through prevention programming and batterers intervention programs. These programs are crucial to changing social and community norms to stop the cycle of violence from continuing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your succinct testimony and right on the money for 2 minutes. Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Fairbanks again, staying in the Fairbanks LIO. Rachel Kobe, Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living.
Hello, my name is Rachel Levy, and I'm the Prevention and Wellness Director at the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. I'm testifying for the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault budget in the Department of Public Safety, specifically the services for victims. Thank you for recognizing victim services as a part of our response to crime in Alaska. I would like to share with you briefly about how funding has had an impact on our prevention and batterers intervention program. My prevention programming involves spending time connecting with our community, learning about the needs we have, and being creative and flexible in addressing those needs effectively. This involves more typically events such as sharing violence statistics and misconceptions at fairs, and includes supporting programming like a youth running curriculum my team is developing. Our prevention youth worker has been a huge asset to our programming and helped raise awareness about issues such as teen dating violence and technology in middle schools. My staff have been able to support some school programming, such as sources of strength for decreasing risk factors for suicide in youth. The amount of outreach, awareness raising, and program participation we provide is directly correlated with the funding we receive to provide resources, staff events, and meet the cost of programming. The Fairbanks Prevention Alliance, which I facilitate, recently asked for more resources around veterans intervention programs in the community, and were surprised to learn how limited their options were. Data predicts that 48% of Alaskans will experience intimate partner violence in their lifetime, and programs like prevention and batterers intervention work together to protect survivors of ongoing violence while preventing new generations from undergoing those same experiences. Funding from these programs is routinely the first to be lost when budget cuts are made, regardless of how prevention and batterers intervention programs are crucial to decreasing violence over time. Funding for victim services directly correlates with our ability to meet the needs of our community and to prevent violence in a sustainable way instead of being solely reactionary. Thank you for your efforts to address the issue of one-time funding and lack of additional funds to meet the critical needs of victims of violence. As you have recognized, long-term funding is necessary to impact community-level change. It's important to all of us as we support our community. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Ms. Greta Jana, Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. Please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Hello, my name is Greta Johns, and I'm a prevention specialist at the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. I am testifying for the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault's budget in the Department of Public Safety, specifically to services for victims. First, I would like to say thank you for the awareness and recognition given to victim service as part of our response to crime in Alaska. I would like to briefly speak about the impact funding has on the resources we are able to provide. As a prevention specialist, I am often out in the community setting up a table at local events, organizations, and businesses to share about the work we do. We have a very small budget for ordering materials for tabling at events. The resources we are able to provide through these tabling opportunities allow us to be able to get printed tangible materials into the hands of people throughout Interior Alaska. On these materials, they have access to our advocate line that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and how to access our website so they don't have to search for our contact information or what steps to take in time of crisis. Due to limited budgeting, we often have a very small supply of materials and have to be very careful how we use them not to run out before the end of the fiscal year. I would also ask that there be an increase in the budget for salary wages. As a prevention specialist, I not only work around the community, but I also help raise awareness through education about key events such as teen dating violence and tech-enabled abuse. Sadly, at my current salary, I could go find a job at a local fast food restaurant making the same salary. The cost of living here in Alaska is substantial, but the pay scale for our roles provide a lifestyle where you are surviving but not truly living. Statistically, we know that 57.7% of Alaska women have experienced intimate partner violence, sexual violence, or both during their last lifetime, and 8 out of 10 rapes are committed by someone the victim knows. The work we do is crucial to helping bring these statistics down and continue to provide a safe shelter for those who find themselves in an unsafe situation or are victims of abuse. There is currently in the budget an amount of $3 million for a one-time increment of general funds and $3.5 million federal appropriation through a request from Senator Murkowski. Without these one-time increment, services for victims would be a $6.5 million short from previous year's funding. We support this funding and would encourage the committee to move the $3 million one-time increment into the base funding for the CDVSA grant line. Thank you for considering these needs and for the work you do to address these issues to help us as we work to provide prevention through education as well as continued resources for victims of violence. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next in Fairbanks, Anna Barbosa, Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. Please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes. Please welcome.
Hello, my name is Anna Barbosa, and I am the Client Service Director at the Interior Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. I am testifying for the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Budget in the Department of Public Safety, specifically to the Service for Victims. I want to thank you for recognizing given to victim services as part of our response to crime in Alaska. I want to spend a little time addressing the impact funding has played in victim services, staff retention, and delivery of service. Our agency has been struggling with retention more than ever. We have experienced a high turnover rate of personnel. My staff has been significantly impacted by the high demand of services needed, working long hours without any additional compensation. We have also not been able to hire more staff to prevent balance in the workspace and allow other important job development opportunities that can increase the morale and satisfaction of employees. The cost of living has increased significantly, and we have found that on average, employees of our agency are unable to sustain themselves with the pay that we provide for them to do that very important job. I want to thank you for recognizing that increasing the budget is needed and important, but it is important to point out that as long as we don't find a long-term solution, these issues will continue to happen. We are able to support the services, to be able to support the services in the communities that we need. Lastly, I want to reiterate the importance of recognizing the need for additional work and resources in the area of violence prevention, developing prevention programs, and resources in addressing crimes in Alaska. I also want to mention that I'm in support of House Bill 41 that increases the budget for mental health trust beneficiaries, specifically for homeless population and funding that supports case management and assisted living. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. You were 1 second from concluding. Well done. Okay, next up, Nikki Sarza testifying. It says affiliations herself. Nikki, if you're on the lines, please give us your name and affiliation in 2 minutes for the record, please.
I'm testifying on an issue in Homer, Alaska. I think I got the wrong day.
You got the wrong day because it said Fritch Creek, and I've been around Fairbanks a while, and I couldn't call a Fritch Creek. So, yeah, call back. Okay, thank you. Next, we're going to go to Eric Troyer, Fairbanks, Fairbanks Cycle Club, Interior Trails. Mr. Troyer, 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, I am speaking in support of the Alaska Long Trail Project.
Oh, hey, hang on 1 second. I got ahead of you. Please put yourself on the record.
Oh, okay. My name is Eric Troyer, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Fairbanks Cycle Club and the Interior Trails Preservation Coalition. I'm speaking in support of Alaska Long Trail Project in the capital budget. Both of these groups support inclusion of all Alaska Long Trail projects in the budget. The Alaska Long Trail will be a world-class trail system that connects Fairbanks to Seward. Vision of a multi-braided trail that encourages many different trail users, motorized and non-motorized, reflects and respects many ways Alaskans use trails. The ALT will benefit locals as well as in-state and out-of-state tourists. It will add an important component to our growing outdoor recreation economy while encouraging Alaskans to get outside more, which is good for our physical and mental health. We especially support the two Fairbanks area projects. The Iceberg Four Season Trails project will improve an important launch-off point for one of Alaska's long trail braids. It will improve often wet lowland trails in the Iceberg Recreation Area so that they can be better used in summer and will provide much better access to year-round upland trails. The Equinox Marathon Trail Project will provide legal access and improve trails for a braid of the ALT that takes in iconic Esther Dome. This current route is often in poor shape and includes sections without public right-of-way. These projects will provide important components of the Alaska Long Trail. It will help our economy while also giving residents places to maintain their physical and mental health. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Well done. Next up in Fairbanks, Mr. Johnson, Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. Good afternoon. Please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, sir.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you, Senator Bishop. This is Jeremy Johnson with the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. I would like to speak to two things regarding the capital budget. I would encourage the support of the state of Alaska assuming primacy over the Clean Water Act, Section 404. The Fairbanks Chamber represents over 600 businesses in the Fairbanks area. We would like that the Department of Environmental Conservation apply for funds to assume the Clean Water Act. Delays in permitting have negatively impacted the business climate in Alaska, and we feel that the state will better address the needs of developers who are already dealing with short construction seasons and a tight labor market while protecting our wetlands. We think state primacy over wetland permitting will allow DEC to explore new and creative ways to perform this task. Additionally, the Chamber supports the City of Fairbanks' request for funding to help demolish the Polaris building in downtown Fairbanks. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Next, we're going to go to David Van Denberg, Fairbanks Downtown Association. Mr. Denberg, please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes. David Van Denberg, Fairbanks Downtown Association. Are you there, sir? Jake, let's go to Marcia Thompson, and then we'll see if they call back. Marcia Thompson?
Yes.
Please put yourself on the record and name and affiliation in 2 minutes, please.
Yes, my name is Marcia Thompson. I live in Fairbanks. I'm calling in as a citizen of Fairbanks, and I just want to thank the Finance Committee for the hard decisions that you have to make. I am here to support HB 39 and HB 41 as they are written. And specifically, I would like to see for the homeless assistance program, $2 million added, and for the special needs housing grant of adding $750,000. The work that I've seen happening in the community that I live in, the Crisis Now has rolled out, has been significant and incredible. And I feel like Fairbanks community is starting to really feel like they have resources and the ability to reach out and have quality care. So I just want to say that I'm very much in support of them as they stand. And I also would like to support the funds for the Polaris coming down so that we can continue to move forward and cleaning up our city. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Angel Stickman. Angel, please put your name and affiliation on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Hello, my name is Angel Stickman. I am a tribal member of Shungnak, but I am not a tribal leader. I'm just a tribal member. I currently live in Fairbanks, and I only represent myself. And I currently live in Fairbanks. So I am here to talk about the Alaska's legislature's considering spending at least the $5 million per year toward taking over the wetlands permitting program from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. These wetlands permits are key to numerous significant decisions across the state, including project proposals like the Amber Road and West Sioux Road, and mining projects like the Pebble Mine. I'm here to speak up for the salmon and the water. So for the last couple of years, the interior villages were not able to fish for salmon, and this budget will only hurt the fish and water, you know, so we don't need to make things any more worse than it already is. So, yes, I am urging legislators to reject this funding. Water and fish are very important to us. You know, at the end of the day, we're not able to eat money, but at the end of the day, water and food are what's important to us, especially the salmon. Thank you.
All right, Angel, thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Mr. Williams, Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Ward's office, and please put yourself on the record, Mr. Williams, in 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. I'm Jim Williams, the Fairbanks North Star Borough Chief of Staff, and I'll keep my comments brief. The borough administration doesn't have any issues. We don't have any issues with the operating budget that's been proposed under the House bill. Please carry on. We're happy with that. I do want to bring to your attention, though, about three CAPSIS requests that are in your queue. I know you're considering the capital budget right now. As you might be aware, a new service area was formed in the Fairbanks North Star Borough this late fall. This is what local government does. This is the lowest level of government, and it's people coming together to self-govern, and we did it. We did it here in Fairbanks. But they need a little help getting going. And really what they need to do is have the capacity to put water, a lot of water on structures when things go sideways. So if you could take a look at those and consider those three CAPSIS requests, any of those would be a definitely a step in the right direction, either for the service area or for wildland firefighters. Either of those types of agencies could use those resources, and we'd be happy to enter into memorandum of agreement if these were funded. The other thing I want to bring to your attention, you probably are aware of it, and I'm humbly and respectfully bringing this to your attention. Please don't take it the wrong way, but the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly is on the cusp of making their budget decision this year, and they're hinging a lot of the decision-making on what's happening in the legislature right now. So if there's decisions to be made on budgeting, especially school formula funding, if we can get to that sooner than later, that would be very beneficial, because right now what we don't want to do is over collect on taxes in the community, because that's less spending and less disposable income for community members. And as you heard from Kara Carlson earlier, every dollar counts right now in our community. So that concludes my testimony, Senator Bishop and the committee. I'm happy to entertain questions.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, Brian Wright, looks like he's an individual in Fairbanks. Mr. Wright, put yourself on the record and 2 minutes, please.
My name is Brian Wright. Can everyone hear me? I'm a board member of Alaska Trails and a motorized user representative of the statewide Outdoor Recreation and Trails Advisory Board. I previously spent 7 years as the trails coordinator for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Maybe it's not a surprise, I'm calling in support of the Alaska Long Trail Project. We have a number of them in the capital budget. specifically for the Fairbanks area, the Iceberg Trail area, and the Equinox Marathon Trail. I urge your support of these projects in recent planning efforts in the Fairbanks and interior communities. Locals have made it clear that they enthusiastically support trail development and these projects specifically. We use trails. We spend money on trails. I don't know if anyone's been shopping for a new skidoo, but a basic expedition is about $10,000 right now. That includes a truck and trailer, of course. Our Fairbanks Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy update highlighted trails as a strength and the long trail specifically as an opportunity. The borough's trail plan update has highlighted this trail as a priority for protection and development. The statewide comprehensive outdoor recreation plan, including its northern region chapter, has highlighted this as a priority project. So all of the scoping we've done statewide and in the interior has really focused us in on this opportunity. These projects have synergy with other existing trail networks and development plans. The borough has recently increased its investment in trail infrastructure, allocating funding to address access issues and capital improvements. But these trail networks and the Alaska Long Trail, they're significant statewide, nationally, and internationally. The trail connects communities along the rail belt, and as such, improvements made in one community bring revenue-generating vacations and recreational activity to other communities along the route. This is very much an appropriate investment at the state level. Trails are a very good investment in parks and recreation world. You spend a little, and you get a lot for a long time. If typical travelers coming to Alaska...
Could you please wrap up your comments, Mr. Wright? We're at a commercial break coming up here.
Just please support that program. I think it's a good investment, and thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Leigh Boland in Fairbanks, Resource Center for Parents and Children. Welcome. Good afternoon. Put your name on the record and your affiliation in 2 minutes, please.
Yes, thank you, Senator Bishop. My name is Leigh Boland, and I am in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm the Executive Director of the Resource Center for Parents and Children, and I'm also the Board President of the Alaska Children's Alliance, which is the membership organization for child advocacy centers. I'm testifying for the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault budget in the Department of Public Safety specific to services for victims. Currently in the budget, there's an amount of $3 million from a one-time increment of general funds and $3.5 million federal appropriations through request from Senator Murkowski. Without these one-time increments, services for victims will be $6.5 million short from previous year's funding. We support this funding and would encourage the committee to move the $3 million one-time increment into the base funding of the CDBSA grants line. RCPC houses Stevie's Place, the Child Advocacy Center that serves Interior Alaska. We, along with our multidisciplinary team, assist in the response to child maltreatment, in particular child sexual abuse and felony-level physical abuse. We see between 400 to 500 children a year with a staff of six. These staff ensure that children and their families have a prompt response 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Two of these positions are funded through our grants with CDBSA. I'm advocating for funding not only to sustain our current staffing, but to add additional funds to increase staffing, which will contribute to employee retention and decreasing burnout in a field that is very difficult. Please help us in our efforts in keeping children safe, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to Katie McClellan, Northern Alaska Environmental Center in Fairbanks. Katie, can you hear us, and could you put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please?
Yes, my name is Katie McClellan, and I am the Clean Water and Mining Program Coordinator at the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. I am calling you to disapprove the $5 million allocation currently proposed to fund State 404 primacy. The Northern Center, along with other conservation organizations, opposes the state effort to take over management of the 404 permitting process. With the overwhelming amount of wetlands in Alaska, taking ownership of this process would be an incredibly complex and expensive endeavor requiring much more than the $5 million proposed. The state is already understaffed and has limited capacity and does not have sufficient funding or other resources to spare in order to run this program. It's illogical for Alaska to pay at minimum $5 million for a service that we currently get for free from the federal government. Other concerns include a lack of NEPA process, reduced public review and participation, and no guaranteed tribal consultation, all of which are currently required as part of the federal 404 permitting process. These shortcomings in the proposed state process will inevitably lead to expensive litigation that would further strain state budget resources.
There are only three states that currently have primacy over the program, each of which has allocated more than twice the budget proposed for Alaska to manage permitting for less than 10% of the acreage of wetlands that we have here in this state. If the program is not properly staffed and appropriately run, it would devastate our wetlands, salmon rivers, and fisheries. DEC has already faced funding cuts and has had to cut critical programs like oil spill response and the Ocean Rangers program as a result. Future funding cuts to the 404 permitting program would inevitably result in slower issuance of permits and or issuing permits that do not protect our lands, waters, fisheries, or communities. We simply cannot afford this program. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to stay in Fairbanks. Christine Schwerigan, I believe. I apologize, but please put yourself on the record. Introduce yourself and 2 minutes, please.
Hi, my name is Kristen Swearingen. I'm calling from Fairbanks with the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. I'm calling to request that you please vote to reject any funding associated with the Department of Environmental Conservation's plan to take over the Clean Water Act 404 permitting program from the federal government. The past 2 years, I've worked as a marine mammal observer down at the Port of Anchorage in Cook Inlet. I spent many long hours contemplating the Cook Inlet beluga whale population. I know the tourism industry and residents love beluga whales. People come and see them by the train or take walking tours along the coastal trail, and seeing a beluga is just the highlight of their trip. Unfortunately, the Cook Inlet beluga population is declining by 10% a year. One factor in their decline is poor water quality from the Sea of Anchorage and impacts to the salmon streams in the area from mining, roads, and other activities that would only make things worse. I fear that if the state takes responsibility for enforcing the Clean Water Act from the federal government, they won't do enough to protect these whales and the salmon they depend on, but instead prioritize fast-tracking development projects. Only three states have assumed the Clean Water Act 404 permitting program, and each state vastly underestimated the financial commitment it required. So let's not do the same. Our state agencies are struggling to fill existing vacancies, and taking this responsibility would make things even worse. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Ryan Hilton, Transportation Director, Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. Please put yourself on the record and 2 minutes, please.
Yep. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Ryan Hinton. I am from Fairbanks. I'm the Transportation Director for the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. We have been clawing our way out of this driver shortage, but unless something is done in the near future, we may find ourselves needing to do the unthinkable, which be laying off drivers because we can no longer afford the routes. State funding for transportation has not been adjusted since 2015. That's 8 years, though our costs continue to rise. In Fairbanks, as well as the rest of the state, the funding falls far short of the eligible expenditures outlined in the state's pupil transportation program in Title IV, Chapter 27 of the Alaska Admin Code. The deficit must be made up from somewhere. Districts must take money from the general fund to shore up transportation. There are already huge deficits in the general fund because the BSA hasn't been adjusted in 7 years. Shoring up transportation means additional cuts that impact the classroom in order to fill in the shortfall in the state's transportation funding. We have reconfigured our bus schedule, consolidated routes, and reduced or eliminated some services already in order to use our diminishing resources as efficiently as possible. Full bus service for FY24 will be 115 routes in Fairbanks. This is far fewer than the 141 routes we had in FY16. The reduced routes will cost us approximately $2.3 million more than full service cost us in FY16. The state funding will be approximately $1.6 million less than it was in FY16. All in all, state funding will fall approximately $3.5 million short of expenditures next year. That is not sustainable. Gutting the classroom in order to shore up support function is also not reasonable. The only alternative is to bring expenditures in line with revenue by drastically decreasing service.
Thank you. Does that conclude your testimony, Mr. Hinton?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. And if you'd make an appointment and call my office, I want to talk to you offline. Thank you. We're going to go to Brenda McFarland, City of Fairbanks. Brenda, would you put yourself on the record, name and affiliation, in 2 minutes, please?
Thank you. My name is Brenda McFarland. I serve as the Crisis Now Coordinator at the City of Fairbanks under the Mayor's Office. And I want to thank you for returning the levels of funding for both the crisis continuum care portions of House Bills 39 and 41. As you may know, in Fairbanks, we have a 24/7 mobile crisis team that is completely being funded by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And because of this, we now have people receiving immediate, appropriate, behavioral health crisis care every day in Fairbanks. This team takes pressure off of dispatch centers, police force, emergency services, and hospitals. I believe these teams and the future stabilization centers are a long-awaited answer for how we meet the behavioral health needs of Alaskans without institutionalization. So I want to thank you for making sure these funds are maintained, as they are critical to continuing this important crisis service work. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to Sarah LaFave from Fairbanks. Ms. LaFave, if you could put yourself on the record and your affiliation, and please start your testimony. 2 minutes, please.
Good afternoon. This is Sarah LaFave. I'm a resident of Fairbanks. I work and live out of Fairbanks. I'm calling to testify on behalf of myself, but I am also a member of the Associated General Contractors, and I work in the construction industry. I have two perspectives on this topic that I would be wanting to share. One, I am with a number of other partners, the holder of a 404 permit for permits in the Fairbanks area as part of land development. And then I also perform an environmental role with my employer, in which I have extensive interactions with DEC in a number of other areas where they have taken primacy, including air and water. And then also I assist in managing the 404 permits on behalf of the company. And in my experience through the 404 process as it exists now, it's incredibly cumbersome, incredibly time-consuming, and incredibly expensive, and is an impediment to development and to good process, in addition to the fact that so much of what happens through the process of working with the Corps of Engineers on permitting results in mitigation dollars leaving the state of Alaska and Alaska losing control of those dollars. I am fully supportive of DEC taking over primacy in this additional area, as my interactions with their staff over decades of employment have shown them to be able to get us to a place where it's very functional for the state of Alaska, and I would encourage you to support funding for this extra endeavor. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Next, Howard Rixey, North Pole Community Chamber of Commerce. Please put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So this is Howard Rixey, the current Vice President of the North Pole Community Chamber of Commerce. I want to speak on behalf of our CAPSIS project for the new Welcome Center in North Pole. We just want to explain why we think it's well warranted there. We believe that there's a lot of social and economic changes in our community, which our community we really define not as the city of North Pole, but rather the greater community of North Pole, which includes the Two Rivers, Pleasant Valley, Tina Hot Springs, North Pole, Moose Creek, Eielson Air Force Base, and Salsha. Most of this change is occurring primarily because of the two military communities growing. They're stretching outside of the Fairbanks area and more into the North Pole or the greater North Pole community there, and changing a lot of things to include the housing demands and the reconfiguration of the neighborhood, some business demands and businesses, demands on families, even the evolution of education and its demands, along with new definitions of what leisure and demand is there. We want to build this new Welcome Center, which we really call the Empowerment Center, because we believe it's going to empower all of the residents, not just visitors. Actually, visitors are our tertiary customers. But the biggest thing we want to offer is welcome services for the new residents, answering all those questions that a new resident might have, along with doing labor development classes for the growing young labor force within the area, along with bolstering entrepreneurship through business seminars, advocating marketing businesses and opportunities there, hoping to bridge some home-based businesses to brick and mortar, along with offering some private orgs a meeting place that they normally wouldn't have, and lastly promoting some kind of mental health, family resiliency by offering family-friendly gathering places and whatnot there. Currently, our project we estimate is around $1 million there, and we've been doing our best to raise funds. And we just hope that the state will consider making a contribution to that effort there. Are there any questions? That's all I have.
All right. Well, thank you for your testimony, and I hope it's warming up there in North Pole. With that, we're going to go to Lorelei Simon, Usabelli Coal Mine, Healy, Alaska. Welcome, and put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Thank you.
you, Senator Bishop. My name is Lorelei Simon. I'm the Vice President of External Affairs for Youth Valley Coal Mine. I also serve on the board for the Alaska Miners Association, as well as the Resource Development Council. Would like to thank yourself as well as Senator Merrick. Sure appreciate Senator Merrick including this line item in the subcommittee's budget. Certainly state assumption of the 404 program will bring stability and predictability to our permitting process. For anyone who is subject to wetlands permitting, such as the mining industry, this will be a significant improvement. We believe that Alaska regulators understand the uniqueness of Alaska and can better manage environmental protection policy in our state. I think the state of Alaska has an excellent track record on managing federal programs, including the Clean Water Act, as well for NPDES, as well as the APDES, Clean Air Act, and the Safe Water Drinking Act. I think that DEC is well equipped to manage the Clean Water Act Section 404 regulation as well, and doing so will certainly bring the regulatory certainty needed to grow investment in the resource sector, such as mining. I think we've also done a good job in our long history of paying our way and contributing to the state economy, and certainly the mining industry is open to an appropriate increase in fees necessary for the state of Alaska to administer the 404 program. We stand ready and willing to work with DEC on a fee structure. And with that, Senator, thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Simon. And that concludes our testifiers for the moment. We're going to take a... Is he back? Oh, there he is. Fairbanks Downtown Association, David Vandenberg. Put your name and affiliation on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Thank you very much. My name is David Vandenberg, the Executive Director at the Downtown Association of Fairbanks, and I represent many of the professional offices and retailers who are in the shadow of the Polaris Hotel, and we want to strongly support in the capital budget Mayor Cruz's request for $3 million to finish the demolition. The city could not wait until it had all the money it would need based on revised cost estimates. It couldn't wait to start the work. It had to start the work. And we're now looking at the specter of potentially not completing the demolition, which would keep the Fairbanks under the thumb of the Polaris Hotel, which has had a deleterious effect on the economy of downtown. So please help Fairbanks with this immovable object and help us to finish the demolition. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Now we have cleaned the deck. 15 minutes at ease. Okay, we're back on the record for public comment. We have one more that has signed in from Fairbanks. It's our Mr. Bernie Carl. Mr. Carl, can you put yourself on the record in 2 minutes, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Bernie Carl, Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'd like to testify on the 404 legislation. Members of the committee, it's very important that Alaska take primacy over our waters. And why? Well, I'll tell you why. Because the federal government shouldn't be in charge of anything. Who knows better about their state than the residents of the state and the people sitting on that committee? And yes, it's going to cost a few dollars. There's going to be a fiscal note. And I want to pay my share. As someone that needs 404 permits, you will be charging me my share for getting that permit, and I'm willing to pay it. And I promise you, if you call 100 people that are in business, all 100 will say they will pay their share. You're going to charge us our share anyway. So just put that in your legislation that it's all going to be paid for. Yeah, you might have to come up with little dollars right now, but in the end, it's going to be the absolute best thing that ever happened to this state. If you want to see us be prosperous, then we need to have primacy over the waters of the state of Alaska. We have an opportunity to do that. Please, please, please take that opportunity. Now, why is that going to be so helpful in the future? Well, it's real simple. I can tell you that I personally have been involved in a 404 situation where we were fined $25,000 a day. We owed $59 million in fines. It took Senator Murkowski, Senator Stevens, Congressman Don Young, and the governor to help me get out of that. Not help my wife get out. Well, to me, it was my wife, by the way. I was totally innocent. Anyway, with that being said, if that would have been an Alaskan issue, there would have never been an issue. That's all I'm saying. The federal government was supposed to do four things. They were supposed to be a military and have forts. They were supposed to coin money. They were supposed to do the post office. They were supposed to dole out land. Those are the four functions they had in the Constitution Convention. What have they been doing? How have they been doing with the military? So-so. How have they been doing with the mail? Not worth a darn. How have they been doing doling out land? Look at what Alaska. We don't even have our land from our statehood compact. I would say that the federal government is getting D minus as an F. So I say the state should take this primacy, and we should do it immediately. I pray that you will do it proper. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Seeing no further testifiers, we'll take a 15-minute recess. on the record, Senate Finance Chandra Kafoy, self. Oh, that's Anchor Point.
Yes, my name is Chandra Kafoy, and I do represent myself, and I'm from Anchor Point. And I am calling about the budget. And so, first off, I just want to say it's odd to me. Well, it's not odd. It's the status quo these days that no one on the finance committee actually represents the majority of Alaskans anymore. That's disgusting. But I'm here to say no income tax, no more sales tax, full PFD first, and it should be the first draw. Alaskans are sick of your shenanigans. And stop eyeballing our wallets, and no to defined benefits, and cut government, big government, enough already. We can't afford it. We can barely afford the bills that we have at home. The cost of everything is rising, and it's time for government to cut back. We're cutting back. You need to cut back. So that's my piece.
Thank you. Next, we're going to Virginia McKee in Two Rivers. Virginia McKee?
Yes.
Yes, please put yourself on the record and your affiliation in 2 minutes, please.
Okay. My name is Virginia McKee, and I am representing myself mostly concerning the Two Rivers, Pleasant Valley Fire Service area. And the $2.8 million that the borough mayor, Bryce Ward, has applied for, our commissioners for the fire service area voted on a level of service that was only fire prevention and education. We already have a building. We have no need of fire trucks or ambulances. We have no need of trained personnel. We are a low, low level of service, fire service area. The $2.8 million that Bryce Ward has applied for will be squandered in this community because we do not have a fire department. We will not have a fire department in this area for as long as 10 years. We have a petition in already going to dissolve the fire service area that was falsely voted in because there was no advertising done for the vote. It was a special election. We have until July 22nd to gather our signatures. We are very close to 400. This $2.8 million is nothing but more money in Bryce Ward's pocket. He will squander it on things that nobody needs, especially Two Rivers. Like I said, we are a very low service, fire service area, and we are concentrating only on fire prevention and education, such as fire extinguishers, smoke alarms, CO2 alarms, education classes on first aid, advanced first aid. I don't know how else to say it. I don't know how much more time I have.
You've got 10 seconds to wrap up.
Okay, I'm wrapping up. Please, for the love of God, vote no on $2.8 million that Bryce Ward wants. Do not waste our money on his silliness.
Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. Mary Calloway, Two Rivers. Please put your name and affiliation on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Mary Calloway. I am also from the Two Rivers area, and I'm calling specifically in regards to the grant that Ms. McKee mentioned there that Mayor Bryce Ward applied for on behalf of the Two Rivers Pleasant Valley community for the Two Rivers Pleasant Valley Fire Service Area. I am against this for a couple of reasons. First off, I think it is grossly premature and it is a very imprudent use of funds. We are a very minimum service area. Our commission was not seated when he applied for this. So our community had no request at all. This was an action that he took upon himself without input. I believe adequate input. He may have talked to a couple people, but without adequate input from the community, and the community, I believe, did not even know about it. I know that it was not requested. This is a huge amount of money that I believe it would be misappropriated if granted. So there we go. I believe that opportunities like this are very valuable in our state. It is not appropriate for us. However, someday in the future, it may be appropriate. But for right now, this grant is not a wise use of our tax money. And it was perhaps applied for in good faith. But our fire service area is primarily education. We're very spread out. There's no way we can support an actual fire department. So we're starting at ground level, and there's no way we need 2.8 or 9 or whatever million dollars at this time. So thank you for your consideration.
All right. Well, thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Antioch. Mr. Herman Morgan from Antioch, please put your name on the record in 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, good afternoon, Chairman. Bishop, can you hear me okay?
Oh, we can hear you good out there in Antioch.
Yeah, Chairman Bishop.
Yes,
Co-Chair
sir.
Bishop, Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Hoffman, Senator Weir, Senator Keough. You need to understand how much has changed in the past few days since this bill has written. A lot of nations are going off the dollar standard on oil and commodities. And it's going to be a huge increase in inflation. You need to give the full permanent fund plus back pay to all lost residents, because it's going to, while they have the buying power, because it belongs to them, permanent fund can afford it. You need to stop this overspending. You should listen to real public. You know, a lot of these people have conflicts of interest and seem like, who are you representing? Are you Alaskans? Are you Americans? You know, America is under what they call indiscriminate warfare, and a lot of state agencies are being used against us. And you guys could open your eyes. And you know, this morning in the House, they had invocation, and some members said that wasn't an invocation, that was a political agenda. Think you need to pray and ask God in Christ Jesus' name, for protection that's going on, and asking for godly wisdom, because we're under attack. You need to stop all this overspending and give people in ages would benefit if you give them the whole permanent fund. Because a lot of people, they were asked to get by subsistence food, gear. Sirs and ma'am, we're under attack. Even that mRNA is being put into food supply now. I think you were listening to me.
Mr. Morgan, could you please wrap up in 10 seconds?
Okay, in 10 seconds, pray and ask God in Christ Jesus' name for protect us from this great attack that's happening all over the world. Their eyes are on Alaska and our natural resources and our homeland. Do what your God-given oath you swore to protect. To all enemies, foreign and domestic, your own people.
Please, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Next, we're going to Gay Wright in Two Rivers. Gay Wright, please put your name and affiliation on the record in 2 minutes of testimony, please.
My name is Gay Wright. I am from Two Rivers, Alaska, and I am in Independence. I am calling about the Two Rivers Pleasant Valley Fire Department. I don't think people intentionally lied about the information about that, but it was not given to us in a complete thing. It was very one-sided. $2.8 million is ridiculous for a fire prevention department, not a fire department. We don't have the hydrants out here to refill the uncommissioned fire truck that was given to us. It would be a huge waste of money. I also want to talk about the income tax. If the people in Juneau would stop going down there thinking they have a a budget that's unlimited and spending $2.8 million on a preventative fire department or on all kinds of things that Alaska does not need, we wouldn't need an income tax. If we had, if the Juneau would tighten its belt like the average American family has to right now, we wouldn't need an income tax. And we need a full PFD. That money was not put in there so representatives and senators and governors can go down to Juneau with no consequence because we can't get to you guys and just spend money like fools and take our PFD. I mean, I've heard, oh, you guys don't even use it for anything but fun. Wrong. As our kids were growing up and still, it fills a fuel tank and for the winter and pays off any bills that we need to get paid because he's going to get laid off. We don't need an income tax if people would just stop spending like there's no tomorrow. We don't need money for the Two Rivers Fire Department. It's just preventative. It's ridiculous.
Thank you for your testimony.
I would like to go on record that that is not necessary. It's crazy spending, and please pay attention. You don't have an unlimited paycheck.
Thank you for your testimony. That concludes today's testimony. We're 4 minutes past the hour of gaveling out. This will conclude this afternoon's meeting. Our next meeting will be tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We will continue public testimony and hear from Bethel, Dillingham, Unalaska, Nome, Kotzebue, Utqiagvik, and the off-net system. Please look at the staff and say, it's all good, nothing else. And we are gaveled out and adjourned at 3:04 p.m.